Meet our audience. They're cutting their hair, working, living their lives, sharing stories, and always listening. So if you're going to interrupt them, it better be good. Prime Media Broadcasting Sales. We help you connect with every fantastic, quirky, and exciting individual in our audience, from the barbershop to the boardroom. Let's make sure your brand is heard. Contact us at advertise@primemedia.co.za today.
This is Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
And at every time around this time, we'll be speaking to our African futurist, Dr. Rose. And today we are tackling what I think could be one of the most pressing global conversations of our time: global cooperation versus global nationalism, and what that means in terms of options for Africa. How do we as Africans navigate those challenges, especially now with Trump in his second White House stint? The World Economic Forum is also deliberating in Davos, and South Africa's leading the G20. So to help us unpack these critical issues, we're joined by Dr. Rose Phillips, the African futurist, through a thought leader and founder of Abundance at Work, a consulting house that helps businesses across Africa unlock abundance. Sorry that it's not Wim Clary this morning, Doc. You're speaking to Graham live on Views and News. How are you doing?
Hello, Graham. I think a change is as good as a holiday. So good to be here and good to meet you. And best for 2025 and for our listeners.
Absolutely. So yeah, let's delve straight into that. A lot happening on the global front, and South Africa find itself moving and shaking with amongst the major countries of the globe right now.
Yeah, look, I think it's a very, very heavy topic to start the year with, but I'm quite excited that we dive into such an important and timely conversation, because I think that the world is very interconnected, and there is no way that any action taken by anybody, either in the U.S. presidency or at Davos, does not affect South Africa and globally a bit more, or regionally a bit more, Africa. So I think it's important that we all understand what that might mean for us, both from a business and also from a personal perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like we're gearing up for more division. As per our discussion at the start of the show, I reflected with the conflict resolutions expert Andre Flock about how the United States appears to be becoming more isolationist, as it wants to, as Trump would say, make America great again. I mean, that's not just a slogan. Ultimately, what he wants is to return the U.S. in his eyes to that, you know, post World War II sort of major superpower that creates all these multinationals within its own image et al, right? And so that's where we're sort of finding ourselves. And where does Africa sort of fit into the milieu of all of that?
Yeah, look, I think that this erosion of global cooperation and the resultant negative impact that it has on social cohesion, we can't ignore it. And that, it's not just a Trump issue, right? I mean, that stuff has been happening, that global decline of cooperation. Yeah, Trump is now leading it, well, America's leading it through that Make America Great Again positioning. That's been happening since 2016 across the world. And it does mean that we're not collectively problem solving. Although having said that, you say, what does that mean for Africa? I don't think that, even though this fragmentation is real and it is very visible, I don't think it's irreversible. I actually do believe that cooperation, while fragile, is not yet beyond repair. And Africa, you know, you asked a question about Africa. We've got 54 countries. And I think we're at a pivotal moment. Each country might have unique economies and cultures with different political and economic and social priorities, and that does make cooperation across regions very difficult. But I also think that we've got common threads that unite us and actually put us in leadership positions. We've got a youthful population, we've got abundant resources, and I'm talking about people, land, minerals, and now increasingly, Graham, our data. Because data about African people are very, very limited, and I think there's going to be a war for our data. And increasing regional integration through the AU and the African Continental Free Trade Area. So I think it's an important time for us, to assert our leadership. And I think that we should not let the opportunity presented to us to lead the G20 pass us by, because I think that we can find solutions that put us in a better place. Interestingly, after South Africa leads the G20, it goes back to America to lead it in 2026. So we do have to position ourselves very, very well.
Of course, in the 60s and 70s, you would argue, many political thinkers would say, that was the era of social welfare, right? So the 60s and 70s, like your Western economies, even South Africa to an extent, but only for white people to a large extent, would create great social circumstances that would protect with great pensions, fantastic, great packages. And it's really from around the early to mid 80s where your Reagans and Thatchers had started becoming, implementing this new neoliberal sort of global economy. Now cooperation is getting into the sticks again. It's a little bit of a challenge, but there's this global cooperation barometer. I think it was launched by McKinsey, and that actually measures it and sees where we are on a scale of sorts. Explain that to me.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It was the post-Cold War era that the world lived through. The world went through that. We have got to lift ourselves out of war, and we have to all look after each other and lift the social safety net for the entire world. It happened to then happen all in the global north more than anything, in developed economies and in certain parts of the global south, exactly like you pointed out. But those are the same elements that we still have that we look at. The one is trade and capital flows that you talk about in the global barometer, right? In goods, services and investments. Now, that trade has lifted, as we talked about, after the Cold War, so really looking at industrialization for the entire world. It's lifted many out of poverty. But tensions and protectionism are now starting to show, and that's going to start slowing progress across the world. America, make America great. I'm sure China wants to make China great. India wants to make India great. Brazil wants to make Brazil great. And sure, South Africa wants to make South Africa great. So what's that going to mean? Innovation and technology. It fueled breakthroughs. I mean, the amount of medical breakthroughs, for example, that we saw in that technology era. But once again, we're now going backwards. Restrictive law. Issues on data sovereignty, data protectionism, unequal access to data. Climate and natural capital. When we look at climate change, we've now got increased climate financing, but emissions continue to rise, and we can't get to our net zero. Once again, we had that move to massive industrialization in the north, which is also why continents like Africa is so disproportionately affected, because even though we contribute under 10% to climate change, we are more impacted. The global north created much of the problem through industrialization, but we are all suffering. Look at health and wellness. I mean, we had the pandemic, and the pandemic was a massive opportunity for collaboration, but we saw the inequalities in health systems that came through there. And then the last one of the barometer measures is peace and security, which I don't have to tell any listener about where we are when it comes to peace and security across the globe, where we have issues of, once again, I think nationalism coming through and geopolitics raising its ugly head.
I mean, Doc, you can just look at...
Yes,
Doc, you could just look at that doomsday clock eking its way closer to midnight, right? It's concerning stuff. This barometer, right, I mean, it helps businesses. It helps the business person make more jobs, etc. So in that sense, it can be quite an effective tool, because everything that you and I have discussed thus far is complex, and it's all interfaceted and interwoven and interconnected, and it's sometimes very difficult to distinguish all of it.
Yeah, and you know, it's very interesting to me that we forget that we cannot be isolationist as a world, because everything we do is completely interconnected. So, yes, you're absolutely right. At an organizational level, this is not just a political conversation. At organizational levels, we have to build resilient organizations. I think boards need to be much more aware of geopolitics. Executive management teams must really look at literacy in geopolitics, risk management, and look at scenario planning, and also look at talent diversification, because I think the broader our minds are around our different lived realities, we have a much better view and much better ears to really understand how to potentially respond to what's going on in the world. I think we have to diversify global trade. If we just think about it, resilience comes from diversification. We all know that. You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. It doesn't come from disconnection. So I think we have to really think about what to do around sourcing strategies, because if there is a trade tariff issue somewhere because of the interconnection of supply chains. I would not be surprised that there are many, many nations that suffer indirectly from things like that. Got to think about climate change and climate action. I think the energy transition, certainly on our continent, must be top of mind for everybody in business, in society, and in government. Got to reimagine health systems, I think. And then finally, unless we restore peace and security, our entire narrative that we hand over to our children will be one of conflict and war instead of cooperation and collaboration.
I mean, even the SANDF, although in a peacekeeping format, find themselves in the conflict in the Eastern DRC at the moment. It's about 21 minutes past 11 o'clock on Cape Talk. Views and news. Myself, Graham Robe, and I'm standing in having a lacquer conversation with the African futurist, Dr. Rose Phillips, talking about all the things that make me sort of very excited about the history and politics of the globe of today. Obviously, Trump taking office, you know, the South African rand is so hinged on the greenback. It's very receptive to anything that the Reserve Bank over in the US, I call it the Reserve Bank just for colloquialist understanding. You know, I think the rand gets a lot of flack a lot of the time, but it's actually quite a robust currency in its own right. How do we now measure everything that you've spoken about, Doc, in terms of the barometer, the insights it can give a business person, and with Trump taking office, how we noted how the rand sort of fluctuates, and how to curb our rising inflation all at once? What does this all mean for the South African context going forward, in your opinion?
Sure, that's a very, very complex question. And like everyone, I'm really, really keen to see what the world does, what the regions do on African continent, what South Africans do. I think the consequences first is going to be quite severe, right? Economic fragmentation, that could disrupt trade to Africa and to South Africa. Climate inaction, that's going to leave us disproportionately affected. I don't know about you, but I have lived through heat waves in Cape Town, and that is climate change in a very, very first world environment. What about our people that are living in poverty areas? We're going to see reduced development assistance, which means as regions, as countries in Africa, we are going to have to step in. And when we have
totally
a very, very wide Gini coefficient, a very, very big difference between the rich and the poor, we also have our own challenges of poverty and inequality in our country. So I don't know how we are going to do that regional cooperation. And we are going to have to now decide whether we align with China, align with India, align with Brazil, double down on BRICS, or link our carriage to America. And I would have wanted us to really put ourselves first, to be honest, with multilateralism at the same time, because our aspirations should be collective African autonomy, because I actually think we sit with a gold mine.
100%. Yes, I can't agree like 100% more. And just that comment around how we're going to get less funding from a developmental perspective in terms of climate change projects and all of that, we already see on the multilateral level through our institutions that a lot of the countries want to see, they want to see, for the lack of a better word, a profit, or what are they going to get out of giving the development funding, right? That's always been a concern, that you can't just, they're not just giving money anymore just for whatever. They sort of need to get something else out of it. Does that mean that, you know, they've got more favorable tax conditions in a certain government or a certain country? And that's sort of where we're sitting at the moment. And it sort of does lift the veil that there's no free handouts anymore, right? Yeah. But what if global cooperation actually gets better? What if, you know, BRICS doesn't become the destabilizer? What if the US and Trump administration says we're going to do more business with South Africa, and, you know, that old sort of like apartheid era Western sort of alliance that South Africa had seen under the National Party government becomes the sort of order of the day again? What if everything is hunky-dory? Would it be better for Africa?
Yeah, look, I think global cooperation, so this is why I don't believe in an Africa first move towards a nationalist agenda like the Americans are doing. Firstly, I don't think we can afford it. I don't believe the Americans can afford it, but they chose Trump, so they must live with the consequences. But I don't think we could do that. If we go down the global cooperation route, let's say that's sort of a policy positioning, then and we are suffering the most with climate inaction, then we stay within the multilateral frameworks of the Paris Agreement so that we can actually get the funding we deserve for our energy transition, which I think we have to lead in as Africa and as South Africans. So absolutely, that's what I think is going to be good out of being contained within global multilateralism and African multilateralism. Because here's the thing, Graham, interregional trade is still under 20%. We trade more with other nations, 30%, 40%, with the U.S., for example, it was up to 65%. It's now dropping as the East is becoming much more trade partners for Africa. But interregionally, under 20%, that doesn't sound right. So I think trade integration much more would be great, and I think that's what's going to happen if we follow a multilateral route. Peace and security, I think multilateral peacekeeping and conflict resolution efforts for our conflict-torn regions, I think we do have to move more and more towards peace, liberation, because only on the basis of peace can you focus on development. Otherwise, all you're worried about is security. And I think finally, and it's probably the most exciting part, technology transfer. I think we have all of the challenges and all of the solutions and the potential innovations to deliver the world better insight in data and what we can do when it comes to technology and AI. And I think that such innovations, whether it's AI, renewable energy, infrastructure for digital, I think that's essential for our development. And I actually think we could be, if not Silicon Valley, we could be the African Silicon Valley in all of our countries, all of our regions, especially in places like South Africa. So I think global cooperation for me sounds like something that we should do, recognizing, of course, that multilateralism does have structural issues, right? Exactly like you say, there isn't free lunches. So we have to use the power of the African Union plus the power of the time that we now have, the G20 here, to really focus on what do we need given that there is no free lunch.
Which is
free trade, no free lunch.
Yeah, which is unfathomable to me, Doc, that we're sitting in an era where the United States, which had created the United Nations World Health Organization within its own sort of perceived democratic image, could now find itself in a position where an almost completely right-wing government has come in and has said, we're withdrawing from that, in a sense. When you look at the conventional, lastly, Doc, and maybe perhaps, indulge me for just 2 minutes before news, we're heading to this question of the GNU in here in the South African context. Is it still much a open sort of leftist policy, neoliberal economic policy order of the day, which it does seem it is, because the ANC is still fairly much using those principles as the lead sort of conduit within the coalition. But do you see the fruit ripening for more African nationalism in the sense of conservative politics coming to the fore, or do you think that, for example, something like the Mkhonto we Sizwe party is a flash in the pan? I just want to get your opinion there.
Oh, I don't really like to talk about politics, but like everybody, I have a view. I want to just mention quickly that statement you made about America used to be the lead humanitarian and has now become the lead capitalist and has moved towards absolute nationalism, driven by largely business principles. As Trump says, I'm a business person that can get things right. I don't really worry too much about the rest of the world. And I think that that's going to teach the world a lesson. I think that the government of national unity in concept is an absolutely brilliant idea because it is more about an operating model of collaboration. If we can get that mindset of collaboration in South Africa, we can get that mindset of collaboration across Africa. What I do not want to see, and I would hate to say because I think we must recognize that we are so interconnected with this continent's future, not South Africa's future, continent's future, that if we don't first and foremost close the gap between the very rich and the very poor, we could become a conflict-torn region in South Africa. And as political parties, we have to work together and look beyond our navels. That's number one. Number two, if we do not take advantage of our strengths, which is the fact that we have probably the largest global free trade area on the planet, being such a large continent, I think we've got about $3.5 trillion of trade that we can harness amongst ourselves. Is that not the most perfect opportunity to lift people out of poverty, to reduce our unemployment, and to give our own digital infrastructure and digital capability a lift? So I'm trying to say politics is not for politics. Politics is for development, social development, economic development, as well as technological development, et cetera, et cetera. It's not just for politics. I wish that our political parties recognize that while you are busy backstabbing each other, the world is burning. And guess what? We're going to feel the flames the most.
And you heard it here on Cape Talk's Views and News. That was Dr. Rose Phillips, African futurist and founder and CEO of Abundance at Work. Shukran, danki. Thank you, Nkosi Kakhulu, for your time. Doc, I really do appreciate it. Hopefully we'll get to chat again soon.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Graham.